Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
There's a tremendous burden of guilt that should be inflicted upon those in Hollywood who put out this violent garbage. The movie was a violent movie. He didn't go to a movie about Madame Curie and shoot people in a theater, did he? Dressed up as Madame Curie in a nun's habit. He didn't go to a movie, The Flying Nun, and shoot people. He didn't go to a movie about Albert Schweitzer and shoot up the theater. He didn't go to a movie about Albert Einstein and shoot up a theater, because they don't make such movies anymore. Every movie is about some degenerate, psychotic, murderer, pornographer, pornographic image, cross-dresser, whatever you name it. Every sick creature on earth is glorified by the vermin of Hollywood. So the kid goes to such a movie and uses that venue to go crazy. It wasn't done around a Disney movie about seven little dogs, was it? It wasn't about Nemo. He didn't go to a movie on Nemo and shoot people up. He went dressed as the Joker in the movie. So don't tell me there's no relationship. There's a clear relationship. So that's villain number one. We've got to control the violence in movies. The moguls of Hollywood will never self-control. They'll never self-censor. Never. You want to make it very political? You heard Obama's statements, which were very measured, as usual, and completely devoid of emotion. Completely devoid of any reference to God. Not one mention of the word God from the world's most powerful man. The kind of speech you would get from a European socialist, a UN representative. But Romney's speech on the Aurora shootings spoke of God, spoke of Hades. He called it a hateful act, which I thought was very intriguing. He said this hateful act. He didn't say tragic act. He didn't say sad act. He said hateful act. He got it exactly right. And he talks about God. Listen to clip 14. Romney is definitely the clear leader here. He's in a time of crisis. He's a better leader than Obama. Listen to clip 14.
Colorado lost youthful voices, which would have brightened their homes, enriched their schools, and brought joy to their families. Our prayer is that the Comforter might bring the peace to their souls that surpasses our understanding. The Apostle Paul explained, "Blessed be God, who comforteth us in all our tribulations, that we may be able to comfort them which are in any trouble."
Now you see, he's a very devout Christian man, and he's expressing his religious views, which is exactly what needs to be done at a time like this. He doesn't have to be generically presidential. He needs to express what he believes needs to be felt. So I think he did a beautiful job at a time like this. And again, you know, you can make anything of it that you wish. However, I believe that as we speak, Obama's brain and Obama's team are working on how to use this crisis to his advantage. It's just human nature. I mean, you'd be foolish not to believe that. I suspect very soon they will try to turn this in some ways into an attack on minorities by a white male. I believe if they can gin that one up, that will be certainly a possibility. There's no question about it. I'll take your calls, though, on your position. By the way, also, drum magazines should be outlawed. I know that you gun fanatics, and I'm a gun owner. Have been since I'm legally able to own a gun. Was on the rifle team in high school, as you will see in my forthcoming book, Train Tracks, where there's actually a photo of me at the rifle team. In Jamaica High School, Queens, New York, if you could believe that, rifle teams. And by the way, incidentally, it's a very important point. Here we were, boys, 15, 14, 16 and years old, in a New York City high school, Mayor Bloomberg, and we had rifles in the school, locked up in a cabinet. We were taught by men who had, most of them were returning veterans from World War II or Korea. And no one ever picked up the gun and shot themselves in Jamaica High School. No one ever turned the gun on another member of the club. No one ran through the hall shooting anyone. Why? Why were we able to use guns in the basement of a New York City high school when I was a kid on a rifle team and not hurt anybody, hurt ourselves? What happened to this country? How did things change where people are so crazy? Well, a good portion of it is the relentless violence put out by Hatzenberg and Spielberg. That's number one. The relentless dripping on the brain, the caustic solution of violence, penetrating the minds of our youth, glorifying guns in every movie since the 1970s. Why is Obama hiding the Fort Hood massacre? Why has Major Nidal Hassan, who executed 13 people and wounded 33, why has he not been brought to justice? Why is the Justice Department on the holder, the U.S. Army, the presidency itself, why are they protecting Major Nidal Hassan from a trial? This is the second largest massacre since the Fort Hood massacre. Why are we not hearing about the Fort Hood massacre? Brilliant science student, says AP. James Egan Holmes came from a well-tended San Diego enclave of two-story homes with red tile roofs. Neighbors recall him as a clean-cut, studious young man of sparing words. And how he wound up painting his hair, dyeing his hair red, and wearing body armor, going into the theater armed with an assault rifle, a shotgun, two Glock handguns, and a high-volume drum magazine attached to the rifle is incomprehensible. Nobody understands this. Nobody understands how this quiet student reached the point where he painted his hair red, called himself the Joker. Where did it come from, such hatred, to shoot strangers like this and maim so many people? I would like to see drum magazines banned. I would like to see people have the right to conceal and carry. Many more people should be carrying guns. More people should be carrying handguns. Think about it. If there were off-duty cops in that theater, I don't know if an off-duty cop would go see such garbage, which seems to be aimed at 9 to 13-year-olds and the unemployed. Who else would go see it? I've never seen a Batman movie. I don't even know why anyone would go. In fact, I remember Batman as a kid. He was a hero. I don't know. When did Batman become a violent anti-establishment movie? I don't even understand this. They perverted that too? Next it'll be the Lone Ranger is some pervert who's a terrorist? The twisted minds of Beverly Hills, there must be in the water somewhere. So what are you going to do? Everyone has an axe to grind with a thing like this. Is everybody on vacation? Does anyone listen to anybody? Is anyone listening to the Savage Nation? 1-800-449-8255. National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. In the year 2012, NAACP, National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, who boo a white man who they don't agree with. That's a great, great piece of public relations for the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Unbelievable to me. Unbelievable to me what goes on in this world and what people get away with under the guise of being some kind of protected group. It's beyond comprehension. And yet Pelosi the genius, Pelosi the high IQ Pelosi, the distinguished Nancy Pelosi who never did insider trading, the distinguished Nancy Pelosi who never ever jammed a bill down anyone's throat, says Romney made a calculated move to get booed at the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. At least Romney had the guts to appear before the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. That's more than we could say for Obama. Now, why would Obama not appear before the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People? Could anyone explain that one to me? Why would Barack Hussein Obama, the first black president, not appear before the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People? I don't understand that. Does anyone have an answer to that? Because Romney went there. I mean, he got booed. Guess they don't like him. But he had the nerve to at least not lie to them, not pander to them. He had the nerve to say he's cutting Obamacare when he becomes president. You got to hand it to Romney. At least he's starting to stand up for something. He's starting to show that he's made of something. Again, I'll give out the number. 1-800-449-8255. Las Vegas, Chris, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I just wanted to say that I understand that you have a huge burden. Every morning you wake up and maybe have to ask yourself, do I have to go to work today? And then deep inside of you, something just draws you forward to plod and pull together all of this things that you bring to us every day, which we're so thankful for. And I want to know, I feel your pain, and not in the Bill Clinton way. I really feel your pain because I have a similar experience every day.
Well, I'm not going to go into crying for myself. Life has been good to me. I mean, when the plane, I didn't know where it would be. I didn't really feel anything. All I thought was, I've had a good life, and I got out a prayer card, and I started to pray. That's all. I felt bad for the thought that my son wouldn't live. I honestly, that's all that went through my mind. But I had no fear, no feelings at all. There are things going on in my life that I choose not to talk about that one day will come out, and you'll be astonished to believe that I've lived through them.
Not surprising, considering the people that you talk about. And
I am the only member of the American media banned in Britain, and nobody in the media gives a rat's behind about what's going on because I am the ultimate outsider. But I bear it. I bear the cross. It's that simple. That's the road I'm on. That's the road God put me on. That's the road God wants me on. That's the pain God wants me to bear.
He knew that.
Thank you for the call. Thanks for the call. I'm not here to complain. I'm not here to complain at all. Elon in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. First, I want to say it's an honor to be able to speak to you. And obviously, Romney is listening to you because the guy was nowhere. And now all of a sudden, he shows up to the NACP and he says exactly what you've been saying.
Well, I don't know. It has to do with me, but everyone's goading him to get out there and say something. Everybody's been saying, get out of the edge of the ring and start fighting.
Well, I've been listening to you every day, and I've been screaming for this guy to finally stand up, and I know you didn't hear me, so he must have heard you.
Elon, are you in New York City, per se?
I used to be. I moved to New Jersey, so now I'm a New Jersey resident.
No, the weather was pretty awful. Hot, the humid, I couldn't believe it. The smell of the garbage in the Manhattan, jeez, it was awful. Thanks for the call. No, I couldn't believe it. I get in, you know, I went down to my store, you know, my father's store was on Ludlow Street with a video camera. I actually went and bought a video camera, figuring I'd have some spare time in addition to seeing the doctor, whatever. I couldn't believe it. I mean, the street was teeming with restaurants, bars, but there was the store. Now it's a bar where my father toiled his whole life. It's now some hipster bar. But the funeral parlor is still there. The exact funeral parlor building is still there. The streets are disgusting. They're dirty. They're hideous. I walked down the street with my son, and I said, I got to show you the luncheonette where the famous fly in the tuna story occurred. You know, he's a grown man. You know, I don't know if it meant anything to him where my father, I came back with a tuna sandwich once to the market. I hated that place. I hated the streets. I was afraid of it as a kid. You know, the bums, the criminals. He said to me, you got to learn to be tough. Go out and get me lunch. He would do it every day, and I was afraid to go out, but he made me. So I go out and get the tuna sandwich. I must have been 5 years old. I come back crying because I open it up. There was a fly in the tuna. My father turned red. His neck swelled. The veins started to swell. He grabbed my hand, threw the stand up, ran down the street holding my hand, ran into that little ugly, disgusting luncheonette and said, how dare you give my son a tuna sandwich with a fly in it? So the greasy counter man looks at him and says, let me see the sandwich. He opens it up. He sees the fly in the tuna. He says, so what? I didn't charge you for the fly. Now, you think it's an old joke. It isn't. Unfortunately, it was true. But that luncheonette was still there. It's become a Mexican restaurant now. It's as dirty as it was then. As dirty as it was then. On the corner, there's a deli called Katz's. I could not believe that on the side of this Katz's delicatessen, the very same inscriptions from like World War II were still up there. Could not believe it. You know, I went in there just as the doors were closing and they wouldn't let us in because they were closed, but there were some nice black guys there and Hispanic guys. I said, look, I grew up. It's okay. I just wanted to show it to. They said, come on in, come on in. I said, are the French fries still as good? I mean, they were closed. These are nice guys. See, I'll tell you something about racial things that you don't understand. A lot of what goes on in this country between races that is good, the vermin in the media don't want you to know. They want you to think that blacks hate whites and whites hate blacks. They want you to think that the races don't get along. That's how they divide and conquer. And believe me, Obama's not too far away from the vermin in the media with regard to dividing the races. I don't see it wherever I go. I don't see it wherever I go. I don't see blacks and whites hating each other. I'm sure it exists. I don't see it, though. I see this generation of black kids, frankly, with almost no racism. Almost none. Almost none. But you wouldn't know that. The media wants you to think that blacks hate you so you could hate them. They live off hatred, as does the Democrat Party. So that's all. It's my one man's view. Streets were disgusting, dirty, horrible. And there are the hipsters, all the white kids, the white hipsters running around. Everyone smoking a cigarette, all the environmentalists, all the genius global warming experts, all smoking cigarettes, living next to garbage, paying $1 million for an apartment that's still a slum. I looked at the buildings. I said, they're the same slum that was here when the gangs in New York was in New York. It was like from the gangs in New York era, like 1870. It was like from the era of 1870, 1880, 1890. They're still living in them. But they're like, I don't know what they're paying, but they're so cool. And then there's the girls in the bar at night. They're having a glass of wine. They're alcoholics. The outfits, the dog walking, the cars, everyone's a star behind their car. Everyone is the star of their own reality show. I never saw anything like it. Every woman, every second, she has cameras following her in her own mind. From the toilet to the closet to the street to the restaurant, there she is. Now I'm getting in a car. Now I'm getting out of a taxi. The way I hail a cab, it should be a reality show. It's time for lunch. It's time for my nails. It's time for yoga. It's time for Prozac. It's time for Mozac. It's time for Chojack. I've never seen anything like it. Everyone's a star behind their car. That's why I want to move to Manhattan. I fit right in. Everyone's walking around with an invisible camera hanging over their head. Used to be halos over people's heads. Now it's invisible cameras following their each and every move.
Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Let's go to the callers. Chuck Houston, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, Mike, first of all, you have a very keen sense of humor. I hope so.
It's all I got left.
Well, you really, really do. But the reason I'm calling is I was a co-pilot once and I was crashing. And at that moment, I was thinking about really getting the engine started. I don't really remember thinking about the family, but I can understand what the people would be thinking in the back of the plane. And I think fact that you thought of your family says that your dominant motive is probably love of family, and your peace was found in that moment in Christ. That's what else can you say about it? Because it's a
I don't know. I don't know. I pulled out a prayer card. It wasn't praying to Jesus, by the way. And the thing is, I prayed to God. To me, I don't want to go into who I prayed to. I prayed to God, and all I asked for was peace. I asked for nothing else, and the only thing I felt was a sadness for my son, nothing else. I didn't fear anything. And I thought that maybe there was something wrong with me, to be honest with you. But thanks, Chuck. I spoke to the pilot afterwards, and he told me that the minute it happened, when the valve failed, he didn't know what happened. All he knows is that the pressurization failed and the plane started to beep. And he said he went to motor memory, and the motor memory is throttle down, nose down, go down to the altitude that you can breathe without a mask. Because, you see, that's what you're supposed to do as a pilot. You get down to a level where you can figure out what's wrong with the pressurization when you don't need pressure, you know what I'm saying, and oxygen. But meanwhile, he had the mask on. I thought it was like walking into a B-29, you know, like a movie. You know, tower, kind of emergency. Well, I didn't know what that was going on. Get in your seat, get the mask on, blah, blah, blah. It's not a big deal. All it did was ruin my ability to have another beer. Because at that point, I didn't want to eat or drink the rest of the flight home. All I wanted to do was get back to San Francisco and my dog. So here I am sitting at my desk. My broadcast desk, the world is good, the bay is good, the birds are good, the dog is good. My dog is underneath the broadcast desk like an RCA Victor dog, a little 10-pound poodle. I mean, he must have missed me because I missed him. Manhattan's just amazing. It's an amazing situation. I love dogs, right? So now, don't take this wrong. I'm sorry, there are too many dogs in Manhattan. I've never seen filth like this in my life. Forget the ladies who used the blue bag from the New York Times for what it was made for. You know, the paper's printed primarily for the ladies in Manhattan to use the blue bag to pick up dog droppings. That we understand. They don't even use a newspaper anymore. They use the blue bag. That's become a very big deal. The price of the paper, what they could do with that Sunday paper, that's for like a big dog. I mean, the Sunday New York Times, you know what I'm saying? They could get a pet horse, a small horse with that one. But after dinner, as I'm walking back from a disgusting Persian restaurant that my friend insisted I eat in because it was so great, horrible food, the worst, horrible. It was hot and muggy and the smell of the dog thing. I could never, ever think that a dog could live in that city, you know? Could not. So, I mean, what do you do with this situation? You know, I'm a dog lover. Let's take additional callers. And you're welcome to call me at 1-800-449. You can call about the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People booing Mitt Romney. You can call about the Thompson submachine, once called the Chicago typewriter, and what's going on in Chicago now. Not too far from that one. And I'll take your calls on this and other topics. Let us begin with, I don't know, Houston, Texas again. I'm big in Texas. Maybe I should move to Texas. I love Texas. The weather's worse than Florida. I'd be there in a minute. I can't take the humidity and heat, but the people are the best in America in many ways, in Houston, in Texas, rather. I mean, everyone I talk to says it's a world unto itself. It's the antithesis to the stupidity of the Upper East Side and the idiocy of San Francisco. So let's go to Texas. Alan, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage, I love your old-time stories growing up in New York. And, of course, I don't know the city, but I was always wondering, do you have any stories about the mafia guys coming in there trying to shake down your old man?
It's a good story, but the truth is he did know someone who was allegedly someone in that world who didn't come in to shake him down, but he came in to play pinochle.
Okay, because I know you remember that scene in The Sopranos when they walk into Starbucks and try to shake it down.
No, I got to tell this story. It's a good one. And by the way, it's funny that you ask it because Train Tracks, which will be out in November, my storybook right after the election, which I know is going to be a big hit because people are going to be dying to forget the election, does not have this story in it. So I can tell it to you now on the show. It's a true story. So my father has this little store with other, you know, each one has a booth and they sell used goods, antiques, whatever. There's a guy who comes around in an unmarked, like a junky two-door old Plymouth to collect rents in the tenements on that very street because he owned a lot of the buildings down there. At the time, him and his friends did, and they would collect rents. He'd come around and collect. If they didn't pay, he gave him a beating, whatever. And he was a really rough-looking guy. Comes in. But he came in the store not to shake anyone down. He came in to get away from the mean streets and play pinochle with my uncle. And here's the funny part. I mean, we all knew who he was. We knew he was one of these people. You know, you're told, and they whisper, oh, he's that guy, Jackie, you know, watch out, blah, blah, blah. So you have a respect for the guy because you're afraid of him, right? Even as a kid, but you're looking at him, you figure he's packing heat, he's this, he's that. But he was a rough guy, you could see, built like a little bear. So it never bothered anybody. So he'd come in to play cards with my uncle who had the booth in the front. And they would play cards, I think rummy or pinochle, I don't know what they're playing. And my uncle was a great guy. He didn't care who the guy was. So he would curse him while they're playing. And this gangster would laugh. He would scream. Let's say the gangster had a better hand than his. He'd throw the hands down. He'd say, you son of a, you know what. And the gangster, who would take no disrespect from anybody, would break into laughter. Why? Because he came in there and let his hair down. He didn't have to walk around with his shell of ego in that place. He could be a regular guy and let the guy he's playing cards with curse him. You follow me? That's part of the story. There's more to it than meets the eye. There's nothing to do with money in that store. There was a scene with a friend's mother. I can't mention it because he was a distant friend. And the mother was, she thought she was very attractive with the Cadillac, you know, from Jamaica States. Apparently, she used to come in there slumming to look for, you know, jewelry, this and that. One day their eyes clicked, and I think something more clicked after the eyes clicked, we heard. But I lost track of the kid, you know. He had a dynamic male energy, and let's say she had a dynamic female energy, and the rest is not history. 1-800-449-MichaelSavage.com. Sacramento, California. Blair, welcome to the program. You're on the Savage Nation.
Good to talk to you again, Dr. Savage. Right now I'm actually in San Francisco.
Oh,
I got to get
God,
out of the sweltering heat in Lafayette. Are you drawn
oh,
to
yeah.
the-
It, is it? Wait, hold it. Is that not the best weather in the world with that fog and the air and the wind?
I'm looking at Alcatraz right now and a tanker going by. It's beautiful.
You're looking at Alcatraz and you're tanked up right now?
No, I'm looking at a tanker. I'm at North Point Tower and I can see the Golden Gate.
Oh, I thought you were tanked up. What's on your mind?
My point is I'd like you to maybe draw a comparison between the mismanagement of Manhattan and the homelessness. I just was at Burgermeister and walking around North Beach and getting my focaccia bread, and I cannot believe all the homeless people that I'm seeing. That obviously,
the bums in San Francisco. There are more bums in San Francisco than garbage bags, but in New York there are more garbage bags than bums, because apparently the bums in New York all have so much welfare they don't even walk around in the streets anymore. They don't have to beg. The Obama administration just takes care of them.
Oh my gosh!
Look, in seriousness, I don't see garbage bags in San Francisco. New York has a national, international disgrace. People are paying $68 million for a 10,000-square-foot penthouse, and they walk downstairs and there's garbage bags piled up to their waist. Why is that going on? Why are there garbage bags in the streets of Manhattan, Mayor Bloomberg? I don't understand it. Thank you. Why are there bums in the streets of San Francisco? Why do the liberals flood the streets with bums? Why? They spend hundreds of millions of dollars on so-called homeless services, and yet the bums proliferate. How do you explain that?
This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
You know, there are a lot of wealthy, successful Americans who agree with me, because they want to give something back. They know they didn't. If you've been successful, you didn't get there on your own. You didn't get there on your own. I'm always struck by people who think, well, it must be because I was just so smart. There are a lot of smart people out there. It must be because I worked harder than everybody else. Let me tell you something. There are a whole bunch of hardworking people out there. When we succeed, we succeed because of our individual initiative, but also because we do things together. There's some things, just like fighting fires, we don't do on our own. I mean, imagine if everybody had their own fire service. That'd be a hard way to organize fighting fires. So we say to ourselves, ever since the founding of this country, you know what, there's some things we do better together. That's how we funded the GI Bill. That's how we created the middle class. That's how we built the Golden Gate Bridge or the Hoover Dam. That's how we invented the internet. That's how we sent a man to the moon. We rise or fall together as one nation and as one people. And that's the reason I'm running for president, because I still believe in that idea. You're not on your own. We're in this together.
Not one caller from Manhattan. Is there anyone in Manhattan listening to this show? Where's WOR today? Doug, are there any WOR New York callers or what? There are. What are they doing? They're not listening to me? I went there. I'm talking about the city, and not one person from New York's listening to this show. I have 9 women in New York who listen to me on WOR. Of the 9 to 10 million alleged listeners that I have nationally, 9 of them are women in New York City, and not one of them has the nerve to call me right now. 1-800-449-8255. What's this? In co-op brewery with libs? Romney guts to go. Dogs in Manhattan, thanks for being our voice. Yeah, why did Obama not go to the National Association of the Advancement of Colored People? Why would he not go there? Romney goes. He goes into the Lions Den and they boo him. And then the psychotics say, oh, he went there to get booed. You hear? That's what Nancy Pelosi had the nerve to say about Romney. I could not believe it. Shocking. But nothing to me is shocking with the Chicago gang running the country, owning the newspapers. Yeah, that's right. Nothing is shocking to me with this gang. And let me tell you something else. I want to say it to you right now, right up front. You know how I am, like, not that enamored of the Republican Party, and I'm Mr., you know, independent? I got to tell you something. If it wasn't for the few Republicans that we have, we'd be living in a dictatorship. Let me clarify that for you. If it wasn't for the few Republicans with guts that we have in the Senate and in the House, we would be living in an absolute Marxist dictatorship. They are the only thing that stands between us and absolute and total tyranny. The only thing that stands between total and absolute corrupt power are the few Republicans who stand up to this Chicago gang. I'm going to say that again. Because, you know, very often you can easily interpret me to thinking that, well, there's no one good in politics. That's not true. I mean, there are such good people out there who are fighting the good fight. They're the people who would have fought at the Alamo. They're the people who landed in Normandy. They're the people who fought their way through the jungles of New Guinea. They're the people who bombed Germany into submission. And without them, we'd all be dead. We'd be living in a communist dictatorship. When you think about what I'm about to tell you right now, you'll come to a shocking realization that the Democrats are a criminal enterprise. Let's talk about Congressman Alan West, a certified war hero. Attacked. Why? What a country it's become. Thanks to 100 years of Fabian crypto-Marxist propaganda and the march through the institutions of the communists, that we have a hero soldier named Alan West who was thrown out of the military, forcibly retired. Why? Because he was mean to a genocidal head-chopping enemy in order to save the lives of his and our own men, and who was then vilified by the Democrats. By the Democrats, being vilified by the Democrats, whose efforts are being backed by a plutocratic former NSDP collaborator named George Soros, in my humble opinion. How do you feel about a major political party called the Democrats calling a man like Alan West, Colonel Alan West, to you, you vermin, you, a war criminal, while making excuses, you rats from Florida, excuses for 7th century psychopaths? How do you feel about a country like this? I don't feel very good about it, which is why I found out what I've been living through, you'll realize that God's hand must be guiding it all. Because no man could live through what I've been living through for the number of years I've been living through it and do a daily show unless God wanted me to do this show. And so therefore, I'm going to win. I'm going to tell you right now. And when I do, people will be in prison. Tap me. New York, WOR. Jordan, you're on the Savage Nation.
Mike, you're so right on. Manhattan is an absolute cesspool. It is a disgrace to walk around the streets. I'm from this city, like yourself. I'm from Queens. We've talked before. I went to high school in the city, and the real estate market for rentals is a bubble. They are getting exorbitant rents, and the cities are disgustingly overbuilt.
Wait, here's the question I have. When I was a kid, the streets were cleaner. There were garbage men, New York City Sanitation Department garbage men in brown uniforms, and there were cans. You had to put ash cans out with the garbage in it. When did it originate that you could throw garbage in a plastic bag that's like 4 feet, 6 feet wide, 10 feet high? When did this originate? Where's all this garbage coming from?
It's a total debasement. It just reflects what's going on.
Well, wait a minute. How do New Yorkers who think they're so cool, how do they live with this? How does Bloomberg, who bans a soda, put up with garbage bags in the street? How blind could people be who think they're environmentalists, who know everything about climate science, eat 3 feet away from a garbage bag that's festering in the heat?
Biggest hypocrites of all.
That's amazing. That's as simple as that. And the real estate is booming. It's like the king has no clothing. It's unbelievable to me. New York, Michael, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello. Okay. I want to just say that I think you are the Moses of our time, trying to lead the people out of Egypt from the oppression. I'm a little disappointed that I didn't bump into you yesterday, because I'm in zip code 10021, right near all the hospitals over here. Anyway, I share your contempt for the Democrats who are trying to...
How is it that liberals don't see that they're fascists? How do they not see this?
American hero.
Thank you. I was on 76th Street in Madison. Gorgeous neighborhood. Love the garbage and the jewelry stores. Yeah, I come on the air today, so what am I talking about? Obama doesn't go to the National Association of Events on Colored People. Romney does. I'm talking about politics. And I mentioned the garbage in New York, the bags. You know, if you live there, you probably, it becomes part of the landscape and you don't notice, like a boil on your back that's been there for so long you start to ignore it, or like eczema. But if you go there, I haven't been to New York for at least 18 years, by the way. It's a funny thing. When my mother left, moved to Florida, God rest her soul, I never went back. You know, my publishers are in Manhattan, but we do it by phone, email, whatever. My agent's there. I don't go there. So I went there. It's like I never left. That's number one. A lot of things have not changed at all. Everyone thinks everything changed. The museum, the Metropolitan Museum, is the greatest museum in the world. I mean, I could spend weeks in that museum. Thank God there's no garbage in the museum. Just walking through the Greco-Roman exhibit is enough to, like, put everything in context. Going to my favorite nook and cranny. I mean, I went to the Islamic wing of the museum because I wanted to see a certain room I used to go to as a poor young man for serenity. I used to go to this room in the Islamic wing that was there. I asked the guard, blah, 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 go down there. Go. There it was, with the trickling fountain. I was just still blown away by the serenity of this room from a house in Syria from the 1920s in the Islamic art wing. It was amazing to see this. I don't think I just see the bad things. I mean, you know, I'm not that negative. New York, Barry, welcome from WOR. Go ahead, please.
Michael, listen, I'm a longtime fan and listener, but you're way, way, way too critical of this town. This is a great town, Michael. Even with the garbage sometimes that piles up in the street before the collection of people come and pick it up. I mean, you know, if you want to feel alive, you come to New York City. There's no other city on the planet like New York City.
Well, I agree. I just said the Metropolitan Museum is the most beautiful, most phenomenal museum on earth. Don't get me wrong. I'm not all negative about it. But somebody has to wake up Mayor Bloomberg to the garbage problem, don't you think? No, gone. Gone with the wind. See, all right. The New Yorkers are very provincial, and they protect it, their hometown.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Who do you most blame for this tragedy? Does this shake your faith in God? I mean, what if you're a parent of one of those children and you're a Bible-believing individual? Does this shake your faith, or do you think this is God's hand? Do you believe the sewer pipe of Hollywood is partly responsible? Do you believe that Katzenberg, Matzenberg, Ratzenberg, and Spielberg are responsible for this? Do you believe that there should be some kind of self-censorship by Katzenberg, Matzenberg, Ratzenberg, and Spielberg? How could you not ask yourself if the violence in this film had anything to do with this jerk, this crazy killer? Because he said he was acting out the Joker from the film. He dyed his hair like the Joker in the film. He wore certain body pieces, or costume pieces that matched the film. He said it. The killer himself, Aurora Dark Knight suspect James Holmes, said he was the Joker. Say the cops. He says he was the Joker. And he went to the movie theater, loaded with the guns, certainly. You can start in with the gun blaming if you wish, but I'm certainly not going to let that occur because it's not about the guns, it's about the shooter. He dyed his hair like the Joker, and the Joker is a well-known villain in the fictional Batman universe. The attack took place at a screening of The Dark Knight Rises, the final movie in the Batman trilogy. And the fact of the matter is, he played the villain. And so I ask you, Hatzenberg, Batzenberg, Ratzenberg, Katzenberg, and Vatzenberg, are they responsible? They put out one violent movie after another. They have no consciousness as to what people think about such movies and their effects upon people, nor do they care. To me, it's like selling drugs. To me, the Hollywood moguls are like drug dealers. But instead of peddling crack, what they're peddling is violence and pornography. Now, there was a time that there was a Movie Association of America, whatever it was. Jack Valenti was the head of it. But before that, there was J. Edgar Hoover. And J. Edgar Hoover was a tough guy, and the movie moguls at the time were afraid of him. And the movie moguls would not put out movies that glorified violence. In fact, as I was a kid, my father told me, he said, you'll notice. See, I remember this. My father said, notice that every time there's a gangster in every movie, in the end he dies. He doesn't get away with it. I said, why is that, Dad? He said, because the movie studios made J. Edgar Hoover understand that they would comply with his desire to not show that crime pays. In fact, the opposite is true. They will show in every movie that crime does not pay. I said, well, that makes sense. That as a kid, even I understood it made sense. Now reverse it. Now, after the 60s, Katzenberg, and Spielberg have made every movie without exception show that crime, in fact, does pay, that leading a straight life is for rubes, and that only perversion and crime pay in this society. So now you see the piper has to be paid. That's one man's opinion. But who do you blame? I know you're not going to blame Katzenberg, and Spielberg. I understand that. How about God? Does this weaken your faith in God? I don't see how it can strengthen your faith, but it certainly shakes a person's view of religion. How could a just God let this happen? How could a just God let the Holocaust happen? How could a just God let a school bus go off a cliff with 16 children who came from a Christian camp? Well, I have an answer to that, or I wouldn't have any faith in God at all. And the way I've dealt with it is a way I've told you about it on the show. And I read it a long time ago when I had questions like this. See if it works for you. God is not omnipotent. God is omnipresent. God observes. God does not move the hand of everything that occurs on the earth. Every movement on earth is not controlled by God. God is omnipresent. He is everywhere. But he does not control the destiny of every individual. I believe there is individual destiny. Otherwise, we're just robots. And I don't believe that I'm a robot. Do you believe you're a robot? You believe you have no individual control over your life? You believe God is moving your every breath? Well, leave me out of that one. Who do you blame the most is the question. I certainly think there's a lot of blame here for the movie industry. I mean, what are you, crazy? You're going to let them double talk you that there's no relationship between watching a violent movie and violence that occurs soon thereafter? I'm not buying that. To me, it's Hatzenberg, Matzenberg, whoever did this movie. That complex of the moguls, the new czars of America, the ones who gave us Obama. Now, speaking of Obama, truthfully, he gave a very polite speech. I guess it's all a president could do. I thought Romney's reaction was more spiritually moving. But truthfully, in my heart of hearts, I believe the president should have called Warner Brothers and said, we're pulling the movie temporarily until we get on top of this. And Warner Brothers should have complied. But you know they can't do it because they put him in office. That's all. He's like an actor on Warner Brothers stage. Obama is like an actor on Warner Brothers stage. You can have an actor tell the producer what to do? So that's why you're not going to get that kind of a response from government. What are you going to do here? There's plenty of blame to go around. At the end of the day, the kids are dead, maimed, wounded for life. The other ones are going to be frightened for the rest of their lives. And the only people who are not going to ever answer for this crime are the violence dealers, the violence peddlers. Those who I have said have created the sewer pipe that runs out of Hollywood into everyone's brain. The film producers are hiding right now. They're probably hiding on their yachts in Nice. Where are they today? Why aren't they apologizing? Because they don't want liability. If I were a shyster lawyer from Columbia or NYU, you can bet that if I was a shyster lawyer from NYU or Columbia or one of the other denizens of villainous lawyers, I would be suing the movie company for putting out this pollution, because it triggered this kid. His hair was dyed like a character, the Joker. He was dressed like the Joker. He was playing a part of the movie. They absolutely could tie it to the movie. What are you, crazy? You can't see the connection? How blind can you be? I'm a fanatic movie watcher. I watch 2-3 movies a night. Some of them I'll turn off if they're vile. If they're egregiously violent, I don't watch them. If they're egregiously sexual, I turn it off because I don't need it. The point is, if it's part of the story, okay. But I believe that the violence in the movies is inherently related to the reaction of some susceptible individuals, to use the phrase of liberals, to the most vulnerable amongst us. They're always talking about the most vulnerable and how the most vulnerable in our society need to be helped with welfare or this fair, that fair, my fair, your fair, his fair, everyone is fair game to the bureaucrat. Well, the vulnerable individuals who are mentally weak, who, whatever the reason, I don't know the idiot's justification. He was studying neurosciences. There was a report that he was dropping out of the PhD program. That's a justification to go kill people because you couldn't make it in a PhD program? That's crazy. Believe me, a PhD program in a real university is probably one of the toughest things you can go through. I did it. I earned my PhD in 2.5 years. One of the world records at University of California at Berkeley. And I'm very proud of it. But there were days I almost cracked from it. There were days I almost snapped that a wife and two children affirmative action was working against me. But I don't want to go into my point. The thing is the PhD program is probably one of the most difficult programs in the world if it's in a real science, as opposed to if it's not in ethnic studies, for example, or something along those lines, one of those fake PhDs, you know, or a governmental agency PhD. You get it in a real science. The kid was studying neurosciences. So, hey, who studies neurosciences? Who knows? Did he have some neurological problems as a child that he was interested in deciphering or elucidating for himself? I don't know. I don't care. He's a cold-hearted mass murderer. He should be executed. Okay? And the violence in the movies has to be stopped. That's it. Blame Hollywood. Blame the government. Now, we don't have the time. Play Obama, the 15-seconder, if you got that one, his comment.
We woke up to news of a tragedy that reminds us of all the ways that we are united as one American family.
Good for you. Think if, God forbid, you're one of the parents and you hear it was your child dead in the movie theater. There's no way to live after that. You can't come back from it. There's almost no way back. You can't. How do you come back from that? What do? You pray to the God who just killed your child? You ask God for relief, the same God who let your child be killed for going to a movie? So your whole world is upside down. It doesn't make sense. So where do you go with this? How does a rational being make sense of this? I don't know. I haven't absorbed it. I was watching it all day, then I turned it off. I couldn't take it anymore. They say he was withdrawing from his PhD program. He had a wonderful undergraduate degree in neuroscience at UC Riverside. He enrolled in a neuroscience PhD program at U Colorado Denver, but was in the process of withdrawing. So right away, red flags go up. Withdrawing, why? What happened? What happened? What went wrong here? It was too hard for him. He cracked from the stress of a grad program. It happens. Perhaps it's the hardest thing on earth is to get a PhD in a real science. After all, it's not a PhD in ethnic studies from Columbia University. After all, it's not a law degree from Harvard for people from Hawaii. You know, this is the real McCoy. So there's no cuteness here. There's nothing. Who do you blame? Who do you blame? I mean, who do you blame? Let me explain something to you. If this guy had that rifle, had that Remington shotgun, had the two Glocks, that would have been bad enough. That's number one. And he had all of that stuff. But do you realize with the drum magazine, which might contain, 100 rounds, he didn't have to reload once. That's why there were so many injured. Because it basically had a machine gun. He had a machine gun. He just had to keep pulling the trigger. It was probably a semi-automatic, unless the lunatic converted it to a full automatic. I mean, there are a lot of manuals around on how to do it. It's a very easy conversion. You go on the internet, you could see how to do it. You go to jail if you do it because it turns it into a military-grade machine gun. But let's assume that he didn't convert it. Let's assume it was the AR-15 standard rifle with a drum magazine. That means you have to pull the trigger each time you want to fire a cartridge, right? So how would he have acted had he only been able to have that rifle plus a 10-round clip or whatever's legal in Colorado, 20-round clip? He would have had to eject the magazine after the 10 rounds were shot, or 15 or 20 rather, and put in another magazine. In that pause, somebody could have tackled him. Right now, there was no pause. The man was a walking machine gunner.
Savage.
Sea of Love by Phil Phillips and the Twilights. Many of you want to relax a little bit in the middle of the news, and I don't blame you because there's only so much bad news you could take. And unfortunately, under this leader that we have, if you want to call him a leader, he's not my leader, he's not my president. I didn't vote for him. No, Obama is not my president. How's that? Does that work for you? How's that for a bumper sticker? Obama is not my president. Play the music.
This came out. I could not believe this. I'm number two in the world in terms of the most listened to host on the internet and on mobile devices. No, really, it's amazing. It says these are the most listened to talk show hosts in the world. All data collected to produce this report came from our server via the TalkStream Live website, Showstopper, the list, Impulse Gadgets, and mobile iPhone app. So they go through the top 50 in the world. And they say Michael Savage is number two in the world, the Power 50, the 50 most influential talk show hosts on the internet. Number one, Limbaugh. Number two, Michael Savage. I mean, this is an amazing story unto itself that's worth discussing at length at another time. If I'm number two in the world, right, and Wallbanger Hannity is number seven, and Fox News never, ever has me on, ABC, CBS, NBC won't even refer to me. I mean, what's going on in this world? There's something going on here. This is an amazing story. So I have a large listenership of younger people who listen to me on mobile devices is what it comes down to. I think my listenership is much bigger, by the way, than reported in Talkers magazine. Because let's say I'm number three in Talkers, right? I'm on terrestrial radio, regular stations, towers, hello, this is Walter Winchell kind of thing. But now you got the fact that I'm number two in the world, including internet, you know, handheld devices, it means the younger people who use them are listening to me. Power 50 includes the big personalities talk show fans would expect, as well as some new media rising stars. It's pretty amazing that I've survived this long as a talk show host, I should add, and that the listenership is so great. Your hair's going to stand up. How do you explain that they survey 1.2 million people? Now, this is a look, I'm an epidemiologist by training. This is a big sample. You know, you sample 15 people, it means nothing. You want to put out a false study, you sample 30 people, right, and come up with some fake conclusion that this is a carcinogen or people want to vote for Obama. You have a sample of 1.2 million people. They sample 1.2 million listeners during the first 6 months of 2012. They produce the Power 50 report, or the 50 most influential talk shows on the internet and on mobile devices, and I'm number two. How is that possible? If I'm ignored, I don't exist. Michael Savage is nobody, blah, blah, blah. I'm number two. How is this possible? Rush is number one, as you'd expect, not because he's so intelligent, but because he's got the biggest outlet. He's got the best distribution. If you have a bad drink and you're on every shelf in the country, you're bound to be number one for a long while. But I have almost no distribution in some places, and I'm still number two on the internet. It's unbelievable. And here's guys who think they're such big shots, like Mark Groucho, Sean Wallbanger, number six and seven. Mark Groucho, Sean Wallbanger. O'Reilly isn't here because he failed in radio, so he's gone. Of course I'm going to be happy with the results. I didn't get here by accident, nor do I stay here by accident. I want to thank them for this study. So, will it be mush, hush, slush, or plush on the Savage Nation? Well, we can talk about garbage in New York, which is, again, I'm like the guy from another planet who goes there and sees garbage. No one else sees it. Some funny things happen. You know, I told you I went there for a medical, but still I had time to go around down to the you know, the streets where my dad had a store. The same garbage. It still smelled. It was still a slum. But the hipsters didn't know that. All the girls and the guys with the cigarettes, they're cool. Everyone's cool. Sitting in the bars at midnight, looking, you know, like beatniks.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I got to do this once in a while. Get it out of my system. Let me tell you a funny hat story in Manhattan. It's a funny side story. It might be funny if you understand the mores of the streets of Manhattan, which apparently I forgot because I've been gone so long, I'm like a rube. So I go out to dinner one of the nights with my my agent and a couple of publishers. It was a nice dinner in some uptown restaurant. I didn't care for the food, honestly. I'm not into these long, you know, but it was jammed. I'm talking about 500 people packed. I don't know whether it was a restaurant that Sinatra ate in. The place I wanted to get into, this is a funny story, a secondary story. There was only one Italian restaurant I wanted to eat in, which nobody can get into. Even the owner can't get into it. It's so small. It's in the, you know, like 100 and whatever, 20th Street. Everybody, every entertainer, every wise guy thing, everybody wants to eat. I got their cookbook. I used their sauce. I wanted to go there. So this publisher publishes their cookbook and couldn't get in. And the owner says, I'm a fan of Michael Savage, but he couldn't give me a table. Can you believe this? That was the only Italian restaurant I wanted to eat in. I couldn't get in. So I went where he wanted to go, whatever. So we're eating, hundreds of people, everyone. You know, Manhattan restaurants are great in the sense if you like the buzz and the crowd and people looking, whatever. I couldn't take it every night. Truthfully, I'd rather get a chicken from Safeway most nights and talk to my dog and watch the news and go on a bike ride and look at a seagull. But, okay, you go to the restaurant, jam, da-da, the meal, till it came, you could faint. And it's such a fancy Italian restaurant that they don't even serve bread. Now you understand how expensive it's going to be. There's not a piece of bread on the table. Not even. And this was so expensive, there wasn't even a breadstick. See, the more expensive, the less food, of course. And it's so déclassé to have bread, they don't have it. And even a breadstick is a mark of a cheap Italian restaurant. The real death knell is a meatball, which is the only thing I wanted to eat, but they didn't have. So I ordered something I didn't want, and I ate it, and my fingers were like, the hands didn't work in the bed at night. I couldn't move the wrist or the hand. I suspect either it was a high salt content or some dipping thing that they did in the kitchen or some extracted sauce that some Schmendrick came up with from a cooking school that must add 600 grams of salt, you know, per milliliter. Nevertheless, I'm dressed, you know, my normal way. I just, okay, I'm not going to dress like a schmuck in a restaurant. I'll tell you exactly what I wore. It's an outfit I like. I wore a black velour jacket, which I love because wherever I go, no matter where I am, it looks good. It's like a retro. Everyone thinks it's retro, but then the guys look at you and say, God, I wish I had one. You know what I mean? I bought it a few years ago, but it was a big thing from the 70s. This was a new one. So I wear it at night wherever I go. Florida, here, everyone loves it. Women love this jacket, black velour. And I have a striped, like, plum purple shirt with a purple tie. Very cool, nice pants, dark pants, whatever. And I have a hat, which you've seen on the cover of Psychological Nudity, if you bought that book. It's a gray Gucci hat, like a little hat, small hat. I don't wear it for effect. I think it's a beautiful hat, and I wear it particularly when it is sun out. I don't want sun on my head, but I don't want to wear a goofy hat. I don't want to wear a cowboy hat. I don't want to wear a cowboy hat and look like Midnight Cowboy. I don't want to wear a big hat or a dumb hat or a liberal hat or, you know, a floppy hat. So it's like a kind of like nice singer's hat. So, okay, wear it in the street, that's okay. I go in the restaurant, and I had it on my head, even though it was nighttime, the sun was still out, the burning sun, I had it on. Go in, sit down, eat the meal, it's 2 hours later. As I'm leaving, I forgot to have the hat, I put it on my head. As I'm walking out, I didn't even realize I had my hat on until four guys who were right out of The Sopranos start pointing at me and mocking me and laughing. Like, who's that schmuck with the hat on? Who does he think he is? I saw it in 2 seconds because I grew up in New York. It was like being in high school again, you know, with the bullies. I didn't give a damn. I'm so disconnected from social interaction and from caring about who says what that I didn't even get offended by it. Thank God I didn't. I would have wound up in the back of a garbage truck. I didn't even get offended. I looked at them and pointed and said, thank you. That's all I said as we walked out of the restaurant. Then I realized they were mocking my hat because I was wearing a hat like I was a big shot or I was trying to be cool. And they were right in a way. Who wears a hat in a restaurant? But the point is it was a funny side story of a hat. Now, where was I before the hat story? Beowulf, I got distracted on the hat. Oh, that's the whole hat story? That was the whole hat story. Now you know why I'm number two in the internet and radio. Why? Because you want me to sit here and bash Obama? How much can I do? I wrote Trickle Up Poverty. It sold almost 300,000 in hardcover. I wrote Trickle Down Tyranny. Okay, many of you bought it. Many of you are too cheap or too ignorant to buy it. Many of you are too, let us say, stingy to buy a copy for your liberal friend. You complain about him, but you don't buy him the one book that you need to buy in order for them to go and make up their mind about the criminality that's going on in the country. I can't help that. So I'm not going to spend every day talking about Obama. The man is a disaster. If he wasn't controlled by the few Republicans with the guts to stand up to him, we'd be living in a Marxist dictatorship. If we don't stand up to him and get rid of this guy and put in this lackluster middle-of-the-road Republican who at least will bring us back to a middle road, we're finished. There's no coming back from it. That's my estimation. And I'm not the only one who says this. You know what I'm saying? And if you look, you don't have to look any further than what this illegitimate, evil, anti-American Democrat Party does to Alan West. Here's a guy, do I have to say to you he's African-American or black? He's black guy. A lifetime military guy, lieutenant colonel. His father was in the military. His uncle was in the military. He's as good American as you're ever going to find. A hero, right? Now, thanks to 100 years of Fabian socialism and the Gramscian method of marching through the institutions, particularly the colleges where they're brainwashed, here we have a hero soldier, Alan West, who was forcibly retired. Why? Because he was mean to a genocidal, head-chopping enemy in order to save the life of his men. And then you have a Democrat Party, Democrats, who vilify Alan West. And you have a Democrat Party backed by a plutocrat who allegedly was a former NSDP collaborator in World War II, poses as a Holocaust victim. And if you say one word about this NSDP collaborator, they call you an anti-Semite. That's the country that we're living in. That is the country that we're living in. That a major political party like the Democrats can feel comfortable calling Alan West a certifiable great American hero, a war criminal, while catering to the 7th century psychopaths at Guantanamo Bay Daycare Center tells me everything I need to know about never, ever voting for one of these dog catchers called Democrats again. And that leads me right back to the garbage of Manhattan. Garbage in, garbage out. Why is Obama not spending a nickel campaigning in New York? He doesn't have to, because these self-righteous idiots who think that they're brilliant in every way, who don't know anything about what's going on right under their noses, are going to vote for him no matter what. No matter what, if their pictures were published of Obama doing the most vile thing, they would say, so what, they all do it. I'm not going to vote for that guy. You're going to vote for that guy, Romney, that Mormon? No, I don't want a bigot like a Mormon in there. See what I just said? You catch that line? I don't want a bigot like a Mormon in there in the White House. Catch that line? You understand that line? You understand the paradox of that line? The mock woman I'm making up. I don't want a bigot like that Mormon in the White House. Get it? Understand it? Well, you better understand it. You're dealing with brainwashed idiots like the one with the fake hyphenated name in Florida, whatever her name is, mishyphenated woman who hates Alan West. She couldn't shine that guy's shoes. That's how great he is, and that's how low she is. And yet she's a politician in America in the year 2012. So don't get me started on my contempt for what these Democrat Marxist socialists have done, are doing, and will do unless they're stopped in their tracks. Now you know why I'm number two in the world on the internet and radio. And I'm listened to around the world.
Savage.
All right, so here's the big story. It's Condoleezza Rice emerging as the front runner for VP. And as I say, okay, you know, it's a retread. We had the Buick already. She was the Buick of the Bush administration. You know, we drove in that car already. Yeah, it's as good a choice as you're going to get out of Romney. Okay, here he is, you know, elite white guy, and first African-American. He'll get like 12 African-Americans who were going to vote for Obama who move over. 12 women who are not sure and will move. He got 24 new votes as a result of this. I'm nothing against her, but like, what is she? What does she stand for? I can't wait for the ad nauseum of Ann Romney leaning over to welcome her to the, you know, all white girl sorority club. Hello. Oh, yes. We're just so open. Yes, come into a sorority. Welcome. It's fine. Romney narrows VP choice as Condi emerges as front runner. I'm thinking out loud. This is what I do for a living. Pardon me if I don't sound like a broadcaster. I'm giving it to you, you know, as it comes out of my head. Sometimes it shocks, sometimes it saddens, sometimes it's humorous, sometimes it's stupid. This is it. It's naked, it's raw, it's the Savage Nation. I'm not enamored of it. It's as good a choice as any as you're going to get out of Romney to begin with. Romney Rice, yay. Okay. I'm going to vote for them. Anything to stop the Marxist dictatorship and taxes through the roof and garbage piling up 50 feet high. If you think 3 feet of garbage in Manhattan is bad now, wait until you see what happens when the unions take over the world, if God forbid the dictator should win a second term. New York, WORGM, fire away, you've got it.
Hi, Dr. Savage. That restaurant you were talking about, the Italian restaurant uptown?
Yes.
I think it's called Feo's, and it's about 116th Street. And
you got it, you got it, you got it. But they didn't let me in, so don't even mention their name.
Yeah, okay. So I went up there about a year ago. Anyway, I knew some fellows that graduated Jamaica High School, where you were talking about, in 1954, 1955.
All right, so what's the main point, Jim? Let's not do a nostalgia job.
Oh, okay. I don't think New York changed that. I changed a lot, but there's still areas in New York that's still old-fashioned. I come from the 40s.
All right, thank you very much. It hasn't changed in some regard. It's dirtier. That's all. With all the progress and all the liberals and all of the concern with the environment, it's filthier than when I was a boy. How's that? Write it down. Let me repeat it in case you missed it. With all of the 50 years of brainwashing about the environment and the ecology and global warming, and we got to clean up the environment and ban soda and ban cigarettes and ban fat and ban popcorn and ban salt, Mayor Bloomberg lets the garbage pile up 4 feet high in the streets of Manhattan. How does that work? I went down there. I went around. Even on the Upper East Side, there's trash bags. But no one sees that. They walk around it. Is it like this in Paris? Is it like this in all of the West? Is this a mark of the decaying Western civilization, the garbage bags? Is that the metaphor? Well, if I were an artist, I'm not going to give it away. I'm a verbal artist. But let's say I was a physical artist. And I had the ability to sleep with the head of the Metropolitan Museum, whoever it might be, if I had wanted to, in order to get my exhibit in a corner of the exhibit, because that's how it's done now in a decaying civilization. Because in San Francisco, it's so bad they had a woman's shoes in a display, which I wrote about once. Her shoes and clothes. They made an entire exhibit about it. So let's say I'm a modern artist and I slept my way up to the top and I knew the head of the Met and I wanted to get in the museum. My exhibit would be a bag of garbage. Manhattan. The year 2012, a bag of garbage with garbage in it. And then the schmuck liberals would come, oh, wow, look at that. How cool. How much is that bag of garbage? Can I pay $13 million? I'll pay $15 million. I'll top you. I'll pay $20 million for that garbage as it leaks out onto the museum floor. $25 million. Do I hear more? I hear 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 20. Do I hear 28, 29? $30 million in that bag of garbage. Do I hear 31, 30, 31, 31? Do I hear 32, 32? $32 million for the bag of garbage from George Soros. Sold to George Soros. $32 million for a bag of garbage for his estate out in Long Island. That's what would happen. That's what would happen. That's the mark of the liberal brain. That's the New York Times. Exhibit of garbage in museums seen to be a harbinger of civilization in decline, says the New York Times. Well, everyone's cool. Sitting in the bars at midnight, like they were like life is too heavy for them, you know, swirling the cheap wine. It was no different than the Bowery when I was a kid, only in the Bowery they drank it in the gutter. Now they're swirling. Well, I don't know what they pay for rent up there, $10,000, $8,000, $6,000, $5,000 for a tenement, a garbage tenement. The guy that my uncle played pinochle with, I guarantee you would be glad if he still owned the apartments today. Well, he's dead. He's long dead in the ground. Mort, dead, finished, gone. Like a mortadella you threw in the bay, finished. That's what happens. It's it. You know, in the peak of your life, when you're 45, 50, you think that you're indestructible. You're going to live forever. You go to a museum like the Metropolitan, you see a tomb of an emperor or a statue of a guy who lived thousands of years ago, who is, of course, not even Adam. He's dust. He's dust now. What is that? It humbles you. See, great art is like religion. That's the point I'm trying to make. I'm fundamentally a spiritual man, not a religious man. But great art to me is very spiritual in the sense that it humbles you in that you understand that you're finite, number one, and that you know, you shouldn't be too proud because at the end of it all, what are you? So the guy who's 50, 45 in the prime of his life, full of energy, laughs at the other guy, you know, abuses people, robs them, whatever. Now, get back to me when he's like whatever age, whenever it hits. And there he is, abandoned in the nursing home by the family. Can't move, in the chair, in the corner, next to the curtain, drooling on himself, staring at a curtain. And he's beaten about the head and neck for the change that his children leave him when they visit him once a month by the third worlder who they hire in the nursing home. And that's the end of his life, even though at one point he was this big, powerful guy in the Mercedes on East 76th Street going into the restaurant that Sinatra ate in. Not a bad run. Not a bad run. I could still do it. That's why I'm listening to. I got to do this once in a while. Get it out of my system.
Yeah, I'm in a crazy mood today. Really, I've had enough of this. If I have to listen to Romney saying nothing and Pelosi saying nothing while the world is burning and the country is melting down from the most incompetent president in American history, I don't know what I'm going to do. So I'm in one of my studios, one of my hidden locations. I have seven studios in various parts of the country. And I move around for various reasons. Number one is I'm an antsy kind of guy. That's an old word for a condition that they describe as medical today called ADD. In my day, it was called intelligence. I'm actually going to have fun today because I got the old instant replay up. I got all my favorite sound bites. This is a relic. I could sell this instant replay hard disk audio 2.0 360 systems machine on my website and raise money with it. I mean, it is a. I feel like I'm looking at a Yugo. It's like a Yugo of. And this is like a Yugo of the radio business. Nobody uses a thing like this. How about the. What is that? Don't know. Three is a dud. 14. We had circus music already. I like the march. The Germanic tune I like very much. Is it still legal in America to play anything with a Germanic implication to it, or is that now considered racism? Okay, turn it off. That's all. Here is the sound of Congress at work doing your business. I invented the word sheeple, roundly stolen, no longer used. All right, very funny. I'm having a good time. I'm supposed to have a good time. First rule of radio, if you don't have a good time, don't go on the air. And if you repeatedly go on the air and you're not having a good time, quit the business. It's as simple as that. You can have a few bad days, but if every day is a bad day, nobody wants to listen to you. And if you're going to fake it, you're not going to make it. You're going to be like that comedian with the name of a beer who no one listens to.
I haven't even begun to dip into the some of the stories that I wanted to get to, but I think it's just as interesting to talk about the Chicago typewriter, the Thompson submachine gun, as it was called. Who's going to run as the VP candidate with the Romney? Is it going to be Mush? No. Hush? No. Slush? No. Might be Plush? Yes. Condi Rice, I think. It'll be a Romney-Rice ticket. Which I'm not so sure is such a big deal. I thought she was a lackluster Secretary of State, personally. I mean, we know what he's doing there. Woman minority, okay. It won't grab one minority vote. Not one. See, that's the mistake. He would have been better off picking a conservative VP candidate, but God forbid they should listen to me. God forbid they should actually listen to me. They already got the Republican vote. Obama's already got the Democrat vote, right? So what's up for grabs? The battleground states and the independent voter. So why would an independent voter care about a retread like Condi Rice? Why? Why? Well, who's making this kind of decision for this guy? It doesn't make sense. This is amateurville. I mean, Trump said the same thing I'm saying. He's got to get rid of this team of schmucks who are the same schmendricks who've been with him since Massachusetts. These are lifers who belong working in a bureaucracy. They have no idea what the actual world is like outside their own world. I do. And I'm telling you, this is not a hot ticket. He's got to pick a hardcore conservative who speaks the lingo of the guy who's not even going to come out and vote unless he picks somebody who stands for borders, language, and culture and says it. That's what he needs. He needs hardcore, scintillating machine gun VP candidate who speaks about patriotism and nationalism and means it. Somebody who stands up for the American flag, the American way, and the American family. Okay? There is nobody, right?
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
There's no way to cope with this. There's no way to cope with it. We know that the violence coming out of the movies is partly to blame, if largely to blame. We know that the overprescription of Prozac and like antidepressants often result in such events. You remember the Columbine shooters. So there's a lot of blame to go around, and there's an awful lot of hot air that's going to go around. But the question is, what is anyone ever going to do about it? The answer is nothing. You think Warner Brothers will pull a film? No. You think people like the director will ever cut back on the violence? In fact, they'll increase it because you know the gross is going to go up in the movie. The lines will now be around the block, around America. I understand Paris, they banned but they stopped the movie. This is going to increase the viewership tremendously. And, you know, it's like monkey see, monkey do. People see violence, they ape it. People see sex, they ape it. People see drug use, they ape it. There's no question about it. It's a neurological thing. They recondition the mind of our youth. And this is what you get. This is what you get. He didn't do it in the midst of a movie about Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. He did it about in the midst of a violent movie called Batman. It's a violent movie. I won't go. I now go to those movies. But it's all violence. It's only about violence. That's all it is. But the kids are dead. The others are wounded. Drum magazine is an issue, a question. There's a lot of questions. And he's crazy. The ultimate answer is he's crazy. And he was evil, and he was hateful. Let's not forget that. This was an evil, hateful human being. Evil, hateful human being. He should get the death penalty. He absolutely should not be allowed to use the insanity defense, which, of course, he will use. And he needs a speedy trial, and we need to see him executed as fast as possible. But, you know, that won't happen either. He'll be on death row for 35 years. They'll turn him into the victim next. That someone looked at him wrong in San Diego. He was bullied. That's coming next. That he was bullied as a youth. So although we don't justify it, this is what happens when you permit bullying. Therefore, you know what's going to come. Every special interest group in the country is going to come up with a cockamamie answer and try to advance their cause. So mass murder is what this is. Mass killers is what this is about. This man planned this methodically. Look at the track of his buying of the guns. They tracked already where the guns. They didn't come from the Bilderbergs. The guy bought the guns over a period of time, over a period of weeks. He planned this a long time. So it's a terrible story. The gun violence is an issue for sure. Drug violence is an issue. Movie violence is an issue. But mass murder is ultimately the issue here. And I don't know what the recommendation is going to be. Remember, mass shootings have occurred in schools, restaurants, shopping malls, health clubs, churches, courthouses, post offices. Nothing seems to be sacred. And there doesn't seem to be an answer to this other than more men need to be armed with handguns in order to protect themselves and their families in public places. And you know and I know that that would reduce the incident of mass murders like this because if, let us say there was a one man in that theater, one man, and he saw this shooting started to occur, he would have hidden under a seat, and when the lunatic came near him, he would have killed him. Could he have killed him? Not with body armor. Probably not. He had a neck guard, head guard. Where did he get the body armor from? Is that legal? Who gave him the body armor? This is military-grade body armor. Where did he get it from? I don't understand that part of it. I'd like to find out where he got the body armor. Okay. You can buy that over the counter now? You're going to argue now that you need body armor to go hunting deer? I mean, where does this end? Where does all this extremism end? Where is the rational middle ground? Where is the golden mean in any of this? Where is the golden mean in any of this discussion? Certainly there is no need for an individual to own a drum magazine. There is no need for an individual to own body armor. That I can think of. Maybe I'm wrong. Attack me now. I know it's coming on the blogs. It doesn't matter to me. As I said to you before, the corn is high in my life. It's very close to the harvest time. So, you know, I've always basically told you what I believe. I'm telling you more what I believe. I'm telling you more about what I believe on a daily basis. Take it for what it is. It's one man's opinion. Don't blame me now. Hollywood needs to be reined in. You think that Obama's going to rein them in with a commission? Never. There is no movie controls. None. One movie is more violent and more pornographic than the one before it. They're raising it up. I mean, escalated now over the years. Would you believe these kind of movies would have been made 15, 20 years ago? Yes. 30 years ago? Maybe. 50 years ago? No. So now move ahead 10, 20, 15 years. Tell me what they're going to be making. Any horror imaginable in your mind, the worst horror they'll be making, The Descendants of Cain. The Descendants of Cain in Hollywood will make the worst vile movies until they're 100 years old. They'll be like corpses. They'll still be making it, The Descendants of Cain in Hollywood, because no amount of power, no amount of money, no amount of violence, no amount of pornography is enough for them. None. So what would you like to do? Pittsburgh, PA, let's start right at the top and go right down to the list. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. What's the solution here? Who do you blame? Tom in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Mr. Savage, Dr. Savage. You are 100% on point. It is the movie industry and the video games that they put out. They promote violence. They promote misuse of firearms. They should be teaching in the schools some type of safety. When they had rifle programs in the schools, the kids learned how to use a gun and how to respect the gun and how to respect other people. And they don't do that anymore.
I agree with you, but we could never have rifle teams again in schools. Never. There's too much drug usage, legal and illegal, for us to ever permit that. See, I disagree with you. In my days, there was almost no drug usage. There was almost none. Nobody that I knew was on a psychoactive drug. They would have been considered a nut. Nobody would have talked to him. Nobody was on a pill in those days. No, I'm not. There's no joke in this. And as far as illegal drugs go, there was very little illegal drug use even in my time. Maybe some marijuana, but not when he was in high school. That already came afterwards, unless you went to jazz clubs or hung around with some kind of hippie somewhere. But there was no drug usage in my high school that I knew of. Certainly no one on the rifle team ever did anything. No, I would definitely not recommend rifle teams in American schools today. Not possible. Not today. Can't be done. Not in this country. It's a different world. Lou in Chicago, go ahead, please.
Yeah, Mike. You know what? It would have been nice if Obama would have made these very nice comments after the Assad terrorist massacre in Fort Hood. But
Why didn't Obama say anything about the Fort Hood massacre? Why isn't he not trying Nidal Hassan, the Muslim major who the FBI overlooked? According to the commission that just came out, the FBI had every warning sign in the world, and they ignored it because he was a Muslim, and they didn't want to be blamed for attacking a Muslim.
Well, you know, Mike, he only comments on murders that involve Caucasian offenders, not other ethnic groups. You know, like,
well, I agree with you. The media will be all over this for months and years to come, and they've already brushed the Fort Hood massacre under the table because it was not conducted by a white male. That's absolutely true. In fact, the vermin at ABC try to blame this guy as a member of, and say this guy was a member of a Tea Party. Did you see that?
I heard that. But, you know, which brings me to my next point that you were talking about, you know, white males involved in these massacres. My theory is that white males have been inculcated by society to repress natural feelings and instincts that they have and kowtow to ethnic groups. I mean, they're always trained.
That is a fascinating observation. And if I were a let us say professor studying this from a sociological point of view, that's certainly a valid thesis. Is the repression of hostility in the white male that is generic in our society today responsible in part for some of these violent outbreaks? It's a great question. Certainly not invalid. That's brilliant. That's very, very brilliant. But it's a sad night. I mean, it really is. What are you going to do with a thing like this? You're going to pray to the same God that let them kill your neighbor's child? You're going to pray to the same God, to let the massacre happen? No one knows what to do. I know what to do. I will save you. I've given you the answer. I've given you the out. I've shown you the exit. This is the egress. Here's how you live with God, and here's how you accept tragedy. You ready for it? Write it down if you never wrote it down. If I never give you anything else, I'll give it to you again. God is not omnipotent. God is omnipresent. He does not control the movement of every leaf, the march of every ant, the flicker of every bird. Yes, he created it all. but he doesn't control individual destinies. We have free will. There are good people, there are ordinary people, and there are evil people. And then there are people who go bad because they are influenced by movies, by peers, by drugs. That's the whole story. Don't blame God. God didn't do this. A man did this.
Savage.
Look, I'm one of the most mature people in the media. I got to be very honest with you. I have a certain role to play. I can joke. I can get angry. I can, you know, whatever. I can do it all. But I'm one of the oldest guys in the media. You don't know that by my voice and energy, because I have more energy than most 30-year-olds, and I have, you know, more drive than most people in this country. So age has nothing to do with it. But I've had a lot of experience and a lot of time to read, a lot of time to think. I have 3 advanced degrees. I've written many books. I've thought about these things. And if I could be of any help to people out there who are right now climbing the walls, they don't know what the heck to make of it all. Whether or not they were directly affected, people are freaked out. They are freaked out over this. Again, another nut goes crazy and wrecks the lives of so many people. The injuries will last for the lifetime. Those who survive this will be in pain the rest of their life. Do you know what a high-powered bullet does to a human being? It's beyond comprehension. This is not cutting your finger on a bread knife. It's a different world we're living in. This is a different world. Different world. Very, very different world. We don't live in dream world anymore. Dreamtown is dead. I was in New York. Nobody sounds like they're from New York. They're all from everywhere else. The real New Yorkers live in Sacramento. They're in Big Elk, Montana, in witness protection, running a pizzeria in Big Elk. Imagine the guy's name, like, Fuzio in Big Elk. What are you doing? Oh, no, I figured I'd open a pizzeria. I got tired of the weather. So that's where all the FBI get their pizza. Wherever you see, like, black cars with guys with big black shoes eating pizza in the middle of nowhere, you can pretty much figure out the rest of that story. 1-800-449-8255. From riches to rags, the Hasidic king of coke. Those are some of the topics. What else is in the news? Beards? No. A CBS New York Times poll shows that Romney is ahead of Obama in the polls. Up, down. He is. He's moving ahead. It is interesting. That's very interesting. George Zimmerman said that the shooting of Trayvon Williams was God's plan. Very smart move that was. You know, there's a certain point where you just keep your mouth shut. Who advised this one? I mean, you go talk to a dummy like that. What do you think's going to happen? You talk to Wallbanger. What do you think's going to happen? You're going to screw your life up. He goes on Wallbanger's show. And Wallbanger seduces him to saying that it was God's will to kill Trayvon Williams. That should really help him with the jury. Good job, Wallbanger. You really did him a favor. Oh, I'm a real conservative. Yeah, I'm a real conservative. Just remember this, folks. Never forget the saying, Big Sisyphus wants you. Big Sisyphus wants you. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to New York City. Tony, fire away. You're up on the Savage Nation.
Mike, I think when it comes to wealth and your children and their work ethic, it's all set by the parents. Your children are a mirror image of you.
I believe that that is true to a certain extent, but you see, there's a danger in that because you can do the best thing in the world and this and that, and that can still turn bad. You can't blame yourself. On the other hand, Tony, if you're very lucky and they become very successful, you shouldn't glow in their success and say you did it either. I have a very different, almost Zen philosophy about children, which is you do the best you can. You're going to make 100,000 mistakes a year, and you pray for the best because you don't really know how it's going to work out. However, there are certain things you can do that are going to, let's say, increase the possibility that they'll work out in life, and that would be putting them to work very young at part-time jobs. Certainly, don't go along with their they-don't-have-to-work number because they'll never amount to anything.
Yeah, true, but if you're a thief and your children and your child knows you're a thief, chances are your kid's going to be a bigger thief than you are.
Well, is that always true? How do you account for that one kid becomes a cop and one becomes a crook? And a good cop, okay? Let's not say cops are crooks now. You know there are many stories like that out of the old days, right?
Oh, of course. The family.
Well, let's put it another way. Say one becomes a priest, one becomes a criminal. Say, well, all priests are bad. You can't jump to that conclusion. Nor can you say all criminals are bad. Actually, there's some nice criminals, actually probably more trustworthy than some lawyers.
Yeah, they hold the door open for you.
They are. They hold the door open for the women and the men. So did you raise children? What did you do to give yourself a step up on them not winding up drug-addicted bums?
Well, I went to work and my wife was a stay-at-home mom.
But did that work out for you?
Excuse me?
Thank you for the call. In other words, both children wound up in Sing Sing. He didn't want to. All right, that happened. No, I'm driving lately. I'm playing. Who's the actor who with the massage recently? A lot of massage with the guys. They dropped John. I feel bad for John Travolta. So he has an inclination in that direction. Who cares? But every time I think of disco, I think of Don Travolta. I call him Don. You call him John. Whatever. I think of Don Travolta in Saturday Night Live. I don't know why. And I liked him in L.A. Confidential, if he was in it. I'm not quite sure. My favorite actor? One of the favorite of that era is Ben Gazzara. Died recently. You want to hear one of the great sleeper movies of all time? I'm talking to you like I'm in a cafe right now. I'm sick and tired of politics for a minute. Give me a break already with the Obama, Romney, Obama, Boomer, Aberdeen. I can't take it anymore. I'd rather talk about what's on my mind. Pasta, the dog, meatballs. You know what I'm saying? How to raise children, keep them from becoming bums the best you can. You know anyone from gone from riches to rags? What happened? Everyone wants to hear the other man's tragedy. It makes them feel better. You know anyone who inherited money and wound up a bum? That they want to hear. It'll make them feel better today. Where was I when before I got distracted? I forgot. But I was talking about Don Travolta. In the 80s disco music. No, the thing is, it's very pleasant to drive. It's a rhythm. If you play disco while driving a car, let's say at a reasonable 60 miles an hour on a highway, it creates a certain rhythm. The dog likes it.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I get depressed listening to piano concertos. If I tune around on the radio dial for various things, I jump from AM, FM to the Marine Weather Band. It's an interesting symphony that I play. Sometimes I'm driving in and I play a talk show host. I can take about a minute. A minute is all I can take. I have no idea what they're talking about. I swear to God, I listen to another talk show. I don't know what. How can you listen day and night about Obama and Romney, Obama, Rama, ding dong? So I turn it off and I switch to FM. Then I go to disco music or hard rock. Then I jump from hard rock. The worst part of radio is when the disc jockeys try to get clever. Oh boy, should they never go off script? They sound like Obama when he drops the teleprompter. So when they do that, when the disc jockeys jump from the music to like trying to get you human and talk, you have no idea how bad it is. I turn to the weather band. I listen to the marine forecast, which is pleasant. Microsoft reports first ever quarterly loss. Can you figure this one out? Weak online ad business and an accounting adjustment. They took a $6.2 billion charge because they bought an online ad service for $6.3 billion and it didn't pay off. So what, he's losing his touch? Another one losing his touch? Who knows? He's got plenty. It wouldn't matter. Did anyone see the segment Locked Up Abroad with the Hasidic King of Coke? I thought it was very well done. I don't believe it. I don't think it was true. It's like another reality show that's fake. They show the guy back in the 80s. He was smuggling coke like crazy. He became a coke king because he was wearing the religious garb. Then he got nailed and he put in the jail in Sao Paulo. So within a couple of days, a guy tries to stab him to death with a knife. Little Jewish guy with payas. Then all of a sudden he says, the guy didn't know what I could do with my hands. But because I was a little kid in Brooklyn, my father sent me to Aikido. And it shows him twisting this big murderer in a Sao Paulo prison with a 9-inch blade, twisting him around on his knife and saying, let it go, let it go. And if you don't, and he dropped him down and the knife went through his stomach and came out his back. Ooh, I can't believe that. You really believe that story? So all the reality shows are fake. It's all fake. Even the how many locked up abroad people? You're supposed to have sympathy for drug dealers? That's the one paradox of the Nat Geo used to be great in the old days. All that with topless women from, you know, like from the third world and like glaciers and kangaroos. And you were able to like look at, you know, in junior high school, you made believe you're interested in glaciers and geology. Were you looking at it beginning? So it was softcore porn. It was always softcore porn, Nat Geo, in some ways. How do you think they built the business up? It was like allowed. You were allowed to look. look, guys did that, whether you want to know it or not. So that, now Nat Geo is suddenly the Earth's coming to an end. Either the Mayan calendar or a comet's about to hit. Every night the world's coming to an end. The sea is going to rise. It's going to swamp Al Gore's ranch in Tennessee. Tipper's going to have to get a new canoe. It's going to be Tippy Canoe and Tyler too. Every day another fright job on Nat Geo. The latest thing is the Locked Up Abroad. How many stories are made up today? Every one of those stories are not real. Do you believe them? But it's everyone's worst nightmare. Everyone in the first world is afraid of winding up in a jail in the third world. So it taps into your core fear of the nightmare that could occur to you, right? You know you couldn't survive in a jail like that. How could you survive there? You can't even survive in a prison here. There's certain ways. I had a guy on. You remember that guy who came on the show years ago from Marin County? I'm not going to mention names. He was a mortgage guy. And he got caught as a fraudster 20 years ago, put him in San Quentin. I had him on the show. I said, how did you survive in San Quentin? He came on this show. Nice guy, really nice guy. He did his time. And he said, I befriended the biggest guy in jail. I said, well, what did you have to offer him? And he said, I offered him the ability to read law books and write letters on his behalf. And as a result, I was protected, which is very interesting. I don't know that that still goes on. But everyone listening to the show probably in the back of their mind knows that the government, being what it is, you're only one breath away from being arrested for something, living in the police state that we live in. We live in a crypto police state. Everyone listening to this show knows that this government is so oppressive, federal, state, and local, that or you're a breath away from being arrested for nothing. Nothing. Trumped-up charges, real charges, fake charges. We're all terrified of the police state. And the prisons are used basically as a weapon to frighten everybody. You know the prison population is disproportionate to the actual crimes. You know that the drug war is a failure. You know that when we have over a million people incarcerated in this country, something is wrong with a so-called democracy, which we're not, when you have a million people incarcerated. It's insanity. And that leads us to the next. Well, what's this? The million people are in jail. They smoked three joints in 1973 and they're still in prison while it's legalized across the country with the fake, medical marijuana laws. It's insanity. So there's a lot of problems here and everyone's afraid of the prison system. And you hear it from both sides. The prison unions lobby the legislators within and they don't want to change the laws. And you hear both sides of the law. So what do you want to talk about in the South? Oh, the movie. I got that distracted. I'm getting bad ADD today. It's like a bad ADD day because I should have had more protein for breakfast. I skip breakfast. I'm like having a slight ADD-like reaction on the radio because I'm famous for the stream of consciousness. What you don't know is it's probably a disorder of some kind that if you're really a normal American, you have no capacity for a stream of consciousness. In fact, the tremendous ability with a stream of consciousness is the mark of some kind of mental disorder. A good American thinks about one thing at a time and sticks to it for at least 6 hours a day in like a moat in the mire, stuck in your cubicle, thinking only of your job or whatever. But I could never do that. I always felt confined by thinking. I felt confined by religion. I felt confined by no religion. I felt confined by hippies. I felt unconfined by hippies. I felt confined by parents. I felt unconfined by parents. I felt confined by my parents' death. Then I felt unconfined by my parents' death. I felt confined by the cemetery. Then I felt unconfined by the cemetery. I feel confined by religious people. Then I feel unconfined by religious people. Isn't that wonderful to have a fluid mind like this? So what I was trying to tell you is I saw a great movie, a little piece of it, the last 5 minutes, which are the best amongst the best. Ben Gazzara, The Killing of a Chinese Bookie, one of the most amazing films ever made. John Cassavetes directed, but Ben Gazzara and Cassavetes were an amazing combination. You know that movie? Don't call about it, but try to catch that one. I've recommended a few movies in my life. The Killing of a Chinese Bookie. Ben Gazzara plays a small Los Angeles nightclub owner, seedy club, a couple of strippers, a guy who has a top hat, who's Mr. Sophisticate, who tells the bad jokes, like a burlesque house kind of, but it's set in the 70s, right? And he gets into some gambling debt to some Chinese triad, and he is given the option of either being whacked himself or killing a Chinese bookie. And the whole movie is about this ordinary night. He's an ordinary, like, club owner. He's not a killer, but he's got his back up against the wall, so he chooses to live rather than to die. So the whole movie is how he's going to get over the fence, through the bodyguards, and kill this guy. It's such an amazingly well-crafted movie. And if you're like me, I like street scenes when it was filmed with real cameras before video. Nothing against video, because it's amazing. HD cameras are astounding. But there's something about the film quality, Sunset Boulevard, blah, blah. So how he goes, gets over the gates, and the girls, before the Silicon, the girls, you know, it was like women before Silicon are in that movie. No, it's like pre-Silicon, P.S. So it was like women, P.S., pre-Silicon. That's a good part of the movie. Ben Gazzara has to be one of the, you want to use the word cool? Ben Gazzara was the epitome of cool. He actually was on a level of Frank Sinatra, incidentally. And in this movie, he plays such a smooth guy. There's not a blip in it. I wish to God I could do it. It's like my thing is coming up September 22nd, and I'm going to ask you about that. I'm not sure I want to do it. It's like booked. I have to do it now. I don't know if I want to do it. I have ambivalence towards it. Should I do it? Will you attend? Won't you attend? I know it'll be sold out at the Marin Veterans Auditorium September 22nd. I'm pretty sure it'll be sold out, but like 90 minutes I'm going to stand up there and entertain you? I don't know if I could do that. I'm a radio host. Radio is different than stand-up. In other words, I'm used to talking for 10, 12 minutes of spritz, and then I go to a break. I also have callers. What am I going to do with you for 90 minutes? So that's the interesting thing. How do I do the breaks? There's no breaks. Now, I've done live performances, the greatest stress on earth. I really admire entertainers, I'll tell you the truth. Forget their politics. I don't know how they do it. Well, they're coked up, or they're on crack. There's no other explanation for someone who can stand up for 60 minutes and make a fool of himself without committing suicide immediately thereafter. I mean, you can't do it on a ham sandwich and sushi. So something's fueling a guy who can do it for 60, 90 minutes. It's a pretty rough operation. 1-800-449-8255. As you can see, I gave you a machine gun approach to talk radio. I've given you about 3,000 topics. Any one of them is potentially a call. Any one of those topics could have touched somebody in the audience in some manner. And I'm glad I did. Now, Teddy is asleep under my feet. He had chicken today, grilled chicken up at the North Beach restaurant out there in the sun. I had a salad and the pasta with the best marinara sauce. Finally, they got it right. Me and my sauces, my God, Maron, you. Every day is another story with me and sauce. It's not good. It's not like yesterday. How come it wasn't? Why'd you change it? I didn't change it. It's the same. How come you add it?
I'll be right back.
Savage.
There's something wrong with me. I feel good. What's wrong with me? I should not feel good. You've got communism raging across the land from the White House to the outhouse. I feel good. I don't understand it. But I had a good time today. I fed the dog chicken. He liked it. I had to give him a bath when I got back from the walk. Oh, I got a new HD video, you know, camera. So I was walking in the streets of San Francisco. I did my tour talking into the camera. Favorite buildings, favorite alleys, favorite scenes, the Transamerica Tower, certain parks, certain statues, the great statue of Georgia O'Keeffe by Marisol. Very few people know it's there. The incredible piece of sculpture by of the Pelican by Benny Bufano. I mean, there's some great art in the streets of San Francisco. I don't think people even know who these artists are. And then the scenes that I see. One day I'll, you know, put them on my internet, on my michaelsavage.com. Let's go to the callers. Bob in North Carolina, welcome to the program.
Mike, how you doing? Live performances, you got to get your energy from the crowd. I'm 50 years old. I do a three-hour show, three, four nights a week, and you got to get your feedback and your energy from the crowd.
That's very interesting. So the crowd itself feeds you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So this is why famous actors will do live performances for the electricity of the audience?
Sure. And, you know, they're like a dog. You know, they can tell if you're afraid or you're timid or you're nervous. They can tell that immediately. So, you know, you give them back, you get what you give, you know. And
that's why Kettle One was invented.
Yes. But I enjoy it, and once you get that feeling, there's no other feeling like that feedback.
Well, you see, that's I do remember my days of the live performances, and my audience loves me. 2,000 people. Remember, these are big audiences in a single theater, and when I come out and I see the roar and see the faces and the love for me, it does throw an energy into you, and it does set you off into a whole different trajectory of energy. You're right. I forgot about it.
It's like an addiction, you know. You get to where there's nothing that replaces that feeling, you know.
So the high you get off the audience doesn't burn you out?
No,
I mean, every once in a while, you know, you don't feel good. You don't feel like going out. But sometimes, you know, once you get out there and you get that feedback, it brings you back up to pace.
I got to tell you this. I do radio, right, every day. And I do get a similar feeling, not the same because there's nobody in the room with me but the dog. But the thing is I have reached a point where my audience, like you're talking to me, you're as real to me as a relative in a room. Do you know that?
Right. I feel the same way when I listen to you, so that's awesome.
That's beautiful. Thanks for the call. Now, he just touched a raw nerve. I was told from the first week or so that I began radio, some of the top people in the industry, I mean, guys who had been around a long time, not performers now, guys who own station groups, they said to me, I have the uncanny ability to come out of the speaker and grab people and pull them in. They said they've never encountered anyone who can reach out from a speaker and pull people into the speaker no matter where they are. Now, where I got that from, I don't know. But the thing is that I do feel my audience. Another big industry leader said, Savage, you're one of the only ones in the industry who actually listens to callers, to what they're saying, and responds to them in a real manner. The rest just are blowing them off and using them as filler. And I think that that does account for the phenomenal, sustainability of the show, to use a PC word. You know, this is like a long-running performance of 18 years. How much longer it will go on is up to God, not up to me. But it's been 18 years. What a run this has been. It's like a Broadway one-man show that's run for 18 years. That's a phenomenon, isn't it? Santa Maria, well, I don't know where to go. Locked up abroad, have to be a parent, little Teddy. What is a normal day of a savage life? That's a good one. Aaron in Fresno, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I just thought it would be great to see a day in the life of Michael Savage. Just,
You don't want to know it. You don't want to know a normal day of like a Michael Savage. You should only limit it to the radio that you hear.
It would be entertaining.
You don't want to know it. What is a day in the life of Michael Savage? I wake up at dawn, first light. I'm up. I can't sleep. I'm on a natural rhythm. I don't care when I go to sleep. If light creeps in through the curtains, I'm up. Okay, that's it. Then you got only 6 in the morning, sometimes 5:45. I look ahead to the show. It's like 9 hours later. It's the old Lenny Bruce joke. Yeah, I always get up 19 hours before a show. It's unbelievable. If you get up at 6 a.m. and my show goes on 3 p.m. on the West Coast, that's 9 hours till showtime. Now, that's like you getting up, if you have a job that starts at 9 a.m., it'd be like you getting up 3 o'clock, what, midnight for your 9 a.m. job? It's too early. So my whole cycle's off, and that the reason is that I go to sleep too early. I lead too normal a life. I'm like a monk, basically I live for radio. And so I should be up till 3 in the morning partying at a nightclub in L.A. with Ben Gazzara's ex-girlfriends. But the thing is I'm not, because then I wouldn't be able to get up in the morning at all, so I don't do that. So here we are. I'm a workhorse. I'm a work ethic guy. I've been working since I'm 5. And that's what's kept me, frankly, that's why I think it's why I'm still sane. Whatever's left of me that's perfectly sane.
Savage.
From Eisenhower to Obama in 2 generations. From Ben Casey to Nurse Jackie in 2 generations. From Mutual Assured Destruction to Assured National Destruction, 2 generations. From Evan Rude to Always Rude in 2 generations. From John Wayne to Lady Gaga in 2 generations. From I Spy to I Cry in 2 generations. From I Love Lucy to I Love Loosely in 2 generations. From Al Einstein to Al Gore in 2 generations. From I Have a Dream to I Have a Scheme in 2 generations. From Catcher in the Rye to Ketchup on the Fly in 2 generations. Starlets to harlots. Preachers to breachers. Athletes to sexleets. Rabbis to sandflies. Boy Scouts to Toy Scouts. Girl Scouts to Twirl Scouts. From the eagle to the beagle in 2 generations. From LSD to ADD. From cardigans to partykins. From Cub Scouts to scouting cubs. From aspirin to OxyContin. From Lady Jane to Let's Get Insane. From science to lie-ince. From law to claw. From zip guns to machine guns. From Manhattans to cosmos. From Red Book to Spread Books. From Acorn the Tree to Acorn the Spree. From babies to puppies. From guppies to yuppies. From private vets to private jets. From soldiers who kill to Soldiers Without Will, from Lassie to Sassy, from Religion to Pigeons, from Eons to Peons, from Rapists to Offenders, from Stickball to Speedballs, from Gallo to Lafitte, from Matus to Chartreuse, from Milltown to Prozac, from the Air Force to a Bear Force, from the Navy to Loose Gravy, from the Army to I'm Swami, from Israel to Fizreal, from Taiwan to Spizwan, from the Dragon and the Eagle to the Dragon and the Beagle, from Dragsters to Drag Queens, from Redwoods to Deadwoods, from Health Foods to Wealth Foods, from Heroes to Zeros, from UFOs to IOUs, from Hirsute to Lawsuit, from Melarolls to Melanine, from Niagara to Viagra, from Coney Island to Survival Island, from the Five Families to the Sly Families, from Al Capone to Sly Stallone, from Ike to Spikes, Truman to Untruman, Truman to Untruman, from Truman to the Untruman, from Reagan to Swayman, Rayburn to Pelosi, from the Eagle to the Beagle, from the Bible to the Legal. That's the story of America the Great to America that greats.
Savage.